brings us to formal hearings from Mr. Arthur Peter Bender and Mr. Edward Bender here concerning eligibility to obtain horseshoe crab pound net permits and horseshoe crab Class B or Class A permits. Let's take these two separate hearings separately. Let's start with Mr. Arthur Peter Bender to start with and give you a chance to state your case here. We'll have staff testify here. You can ask some questions to staff. You can rebut, put the matter before the commission. Do you swear to tell the everything you will testify here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Thank you very much.
Please state your name for the record.
Arthur Bender.
I'll tell you what, whichever issue you feel is most pertinent to address first, please feel free.
We'll start with the pound net. I've had pound nets for several years. I've been involved in the horseshoe crab industry for about 20 years, 22, 21 years, over 20 years. I've had an unrestricted license ever since. I was one of the first people to get an unrestricted license. As soon as they were issued, I got mine. The pound nets that I have in the past few years were inshore pound nets. They caught horseshoe crabs. But if we were involved, I've been involved in the family business. I have never really fished my inshore pounds. It's been, I fished more offshore. I fished for my father, I fished for my mother, fished pound nets of my own offshore. There's been several occasions that I may have, if I caught horseshoe crabs, the season was already closed. I have found times when I actually have harvested one or two horseshoe crabs. Normally, I don't start until July or something like that when we put the deep water pounds in. And so if we do inadvertently catch one or two horseshoe crabs, it's a very small catch, throw them back. On the other hand, my brother has fished for some of my traps, my father's traps, and he reported those horseshoe crabs. The problem that we ran into, he was the harvester. He reported all of the horseshoe crabs under his card, under his name. And 7 or 8 years ago, we're talking years ago, I wasn't clear on agent versus harvester. Because as you'll hear in a few minutes, there's another issue where I ran a boat for my father, and I reported landings under my card because I ran the boat. But actually, it's his boat, his license on the boat, and he is in jeopardy of losing, or at the moment, he is not eligible for a Class A permit because I wrote all those crabs harvested under 2215, which is my card. I was the harvester, but technically I was the agent running his boat. But getting back to the pound nets, that's the issue we have right here, is that I had inshore pound nets that caught horseshoe crabs. My brother fished those traps. The crabs were reported, but they were reported under his name. So I'm asking that I get a pound net license because at the moment, I have inshore pounds now, I'm putting them this year, and technically I can't land any crabs. My brother, he can go out and land crabs, but I can't. I mean, if I fish an inshore trap this year during the period of time when horseshoe crabbing is open to pound nets, I can't land. And I feel like that. Well, I feel it's unfair. I mean, another issue is I did have a restricted license. You actually had to have some sort, either a bycatch license or an unrestricted license in order to land horseshoe crabs by pound net, which I did have. But the fact is I have no reported landings under my card number. And my brother is here that could testify or add to the fact. That's why he's here today. I asked him to come along to maybe just so you're not just taking my word for it, that I had a licensed pound net for several years. You only had to land one crab one crab in a period of 18 years, which I didn't have a pine net for 18 years, but I've had a pine net. I think I've got over 10 years of licensing during that criteria period. There's no question. I don't think anybody here would think there's any question that one of my inshore pine nets caught one horseshoe crab. This is one horseshoe crab. This is a matter of mistakenly reporting something several years ago that we had no idea was going to cause me to not get a license or my father not to get a license. And again, that's the issue that I have brought here.
Could you address the Clancy horseshoe crab permit while you're here?
Sure. Now?
Please.
I have a question for you about that. Now, I, on the 27th of January, I brought a petition requesting repeal of license requirements and exceptions, which it states here, either and only one of the following two available horseshoe crab permits. In other words, the way the commission wrote this law, you can only have a Class A license or a Class B license. Can't hold both. But as soon as a restricted, an unrestricted license came out, I got one. I was eligible. When the restricted licenses, which is a RHCEL restricted license, became available, which had really nothing to do with horseshoe crab, and you didn't have to land horseshoe crabs to be eligible for this license. You had to land 10,000 pounds of whelks during a 2 or 3 year period. Well, I fit in for that criteria. And I had a whelk boat. I had a boat that went Kong potty. This was formed by the commission, I believe, to help whelk fishermen that require horseshoe crabs as bait, which I own a boat that Kong pots. And I've caught a lot of conks, so I got both licenses. I've used both licenses. I have landings, proof of landings, at two vessels working last year using my restricted license and my unrestricted license. Now, I sent some questions to, it was, I don't know, 10 or 15 questions. I have the questions here that I sent to Mr. O'Reilly. It's one of the questions that I asked him was how many fishermen held both a RHCEL and an HCEL? The answer was one, which is me. Now, it's my understanding that really that you can't, I'm not going to say the commission can't do something because apparently it's been done, but I would certainly hope that it would be rescinded. I mean, I'm singled out here. I didn't think it was constitutional for a regulatory group to single out one single person and take his license. And that's what's been done to me. I had two boats working last year. I had landings. I had one vessel with my CFRL, commercial registration fishing license. The other boat had a landing license, which allows her to land horseshoe crabs. I didn't need, because one of the, all right, I'll jump it around a little bit, but I asked the question, why does staff propose that the wording either and only one of the following horseshoe crab dredge permits be included in this paragraph that states that you should, you have the eligibility requirements and whether you could have a Class A or Class B? And the answer was a reduction effort that any provision allowing an individual dual permits in the same fishery did not meet the intent of reducing it. Well, that may be true, but I didn't think one person could be eliminated, that a law should be formed to just single out one individual. And if that was a reduction effort, I also asked in this petition to to remove lost here for a second. The horseshoe crab bycatch permit. There were six individuals. Let me go to a question. I've got another question here. I asked Mr. O'Reilly, Chief O'Reilly, how many bycatch fishermen are eligible for a Class B horseshoe crab dredge permit? And the answer was, of the 68 individuals eligible for a horseshoe crab bycatch permit, only six are currently available for a Class B dredge permit. Now, anyone that had a bycatch permit to go dredging horseshoe crabs had to be involved in either the blue crab fishery or the conch dredge fishery. They could not dredge on Sundays. They were limited to areas that they could work, times of the year. The blue crab dredging haven't been able to dredge crabs for several years now. So these bycatch fishermen could not work for several months out of the year, and when they couldn't work on Sundays. They could only work half a day from from 1 hour before sunset to an hour before daylight. Now, by giving them a Class B license, and they were only allowed to land 500 horseshoe crabs. Now, by giving these six individuals a Class B license, they're allowed to land 1,000 horseshoe crabs. And they can work 24/7. January 1st, when horseshoe crabbing opens, they can go to work. Now, why, if it's a reducing effort, take my license, single me out, write a sentence in there, the only person that affected was me. Why is it fair to do that? How is that if that's a reducing effort, then why are six individuals that never targeted a horseshoe crab allowed to enter this directed fishery? I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's legal. As far as I know, I had several conversations. I went to industry meetings, had several conversations with staff. They all knew that I had RACEL. I had a restricted license and an unrestricted license. Never did anybody tell me, I'd never heard it at any industry meetings, that sentence was going to be put into the regulations, banning me from having both licenses. It's not advertised either, as far as I know. Now, I've no doubt it was advertised that there were going to be changes, but that wasn't in there. I think that alone the commission should rescind that, repeal it. That part was not advertised. And I'm probably missing something, but that's pretty much most of it in a nutshell. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Bender. Any questions from the commission? Mr. Earthman.
Mr. Bender, at this public hearing that took place on December 10th, 2013, were you in attendance?
I'm sorry?
Were you in attendance at the public hearing on December 10th?
No, I was not.
Why did you not?
Well,
come to
I
the
had
public
some
hearing.
Conversations with staff about the pound net issue, the reporting issue, and they felt that it was not something that I could bring forward to the commission, bring forward to the commission as far as arguing about whether a law should be passed. It was more of a reporting issue that should be taken care of at maybe a public hearing. But that could be done at any time. In other words, there was no question about the eligibility. This was a question of reporting. So as far as I knew, the laws, the regulations that I knew were going to be passed, there was really no reason for me to come and discuss that. I did not know, because it was not advertised, that the sentence no individual would be able to, an individual would only be able to hold one, either a Class A or a Class B license. If I would have known that, I'd have been here. But I went to the industry meetings. In other words, I felt that I understood what was on the agenda that day. I was busy. I was dredging oysters. And I'm like, well, okay, we'll take care of that at a later date. That's why I thought that what was being passed was not going to directly affect me, other than the fact that I knew that I didn't have horseshoe crab landings, excuse me, but I didn't think that, I mean, the regulation was going to be passed anyway. And I'm bringing this here now because just explaining why. Do you understand why I wasn't here at that meeting now?
Well, I guess, I mean, I understand maybe you had a different understanding as to what took place on the 10th of December, but leading up to that, there were several industry meetings that took place, and at that time, there was only a discussion about reporting, that this hearing was going to be about reporting requirements on the 10th of December?
No.
I mean, there seemed to be, during the public hearing here at the commission, there was a lot of discussion about those industry meetings that took place.
Okay.
And it seemed like it was a lot more than just reporting requirements that were discussed at those industry meetings.
Right. That's correct.
So that's why I was asking why you were not in attendance on the 10th of December, because a lot of this was discussed at that time. But if you didn't make it, obviously you didn't make it, I guess.
Well, no, there really wasn't any need for me to be here as far as I knew. I mean, what could I have done differently other than, I did not know. There was never any mention of the fact that you would only be able to hold either a Class A or a Class B license. But I can tell you a lot of things that we talked about at the industry meeting. The fact that there would be a Class A and a Class B, which I was eligible for a restricted and an unrestricted. You understand what I'm saying? So, okay, in my mind, I'm going to be eligible for a Class A and a Class B. Why should I come? And, you know, I mean, I'm here today. I've been here all day long. I didn't want, you know, if I didn't feel like there was something that I needed to come and address the commission about, why come?
Well, I was I'm not going to take any more time. I was only suggesting we could have dealt with this back in December. That's all.
Well, and possibly so, but I didn't even. If I would have known that was going to come up, I would have.
Okay.
And as far as the reporting requirements, you know, we're here today. It was something that I knew was going to come up. I was extremely busy, so you know, it gives us a little bit more time to look back and study. Exactly. We weren't quite. No one was quite sure what was going to pass anyway. So, but as far as you know, the pine net stuff and all that, whatever passed, then we could actually look and see where we stood, what licenses were we eligible for, which ones weren't we eligible for, etc. So that's why we're here today, or that's why I'm here.
Any other questions from the commission? Mr. Chris, can you? Or Mr. O'Reilly?
Yeah.
Can you help clarify this a bit?
Not exactly. Mr. Grist and Mr. Mm-hmm. Kenyon are here for that purpose.
One second, please. I think it's finished putting on the evidence first. Does anybody else want to call on anything? I think this way, it's segmented that way.
To keep a formal hearing in order here, Mr. Bender, is there anyone else here you wish to testify on your behalf?
Is my testimony alone acceptable that I have a fish trap?
Whatever you wish.
Well, could my brother just come forward?
Mr. Bender, this is a formal hearing. I need to swear you in as well. Do you swear the testimony you'll give here today for the purposes of this meeting will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you God?
I do.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record, please.
My name's Mark Bender. I'm Pete's brother, my father. I mean, this whole thing is just a matter of reporting. I fished all these pine nets for years and years, and there's no possible way that you can put a pine net in and not catch one horseshoe crab. It's just utterly impossible. I mean, you catch them when you don't want to catch them, so, I mean, you know, And as far as the drudging thing with my father, I might as well speak all at one time. I won't have to get up here again. My brother kind of misspoke. Oh, well, never mind.
Okay, Mr. Bennett, we're going to take these to separate hearings.
Okay. All right. Well, as far as I just reported everything to me. The commission brought me up here one time before about horseshoe crabs, some crabs that my brother had given me that he had reported, and I sold them, and I didn't report them, and I come for the commission, you know, and I said, well, I didn't want to report the same crab twice, and it was just a wash, and everything was okay. And so when I caught these crabs from them, I was actually the harvester, and this is years ago, and I didn't realize it was going to be all this headache. So I just put them under my card, and I reported all the crabs, my father's crabs, my brother's crabs, my crabs. I just reported them all. But I fished my brother's pine nuts. I fished my father's pine nuts. And then all the crabs that were caught went my name. So I guess that's all I got to say about the pine nut issue, unless you all got something.
I don't think so. Thank you, sir.
That's all I have at the moment. I'd like to reserve. I know we've been here a long time.
Okay.
Reserve, right?
Of course. Yes. Chief
Arroyo. Okay. Again, there's a reason why Joe Grist mainly will address these questions. I missed the November 10th. I think it was November 10th.
Pardon? November
4th. The last industry meeting. I missed that. I also missed the December 10th commission meeting. Due to other obligations meetings. But I have been to the industry meetings, and I just want to indicate to the commission, and you've watched it over the last several years, there definitely has been interest in reducing overcapacity. There definitely has been interest in limiting the amount of fishermen that are assigned to any particular gear type. You'll remember the hand harvesters came up with a solution last year. They limited that particular gear type, that fishery. There is a control date that we go by, and we've had that. And I think the reduction that was mentioned by Mr. Bender is simply about overcapacity. This fishery, the history is it did start out with a endorsement license, what we called a HCEL, and it was not producing enough crabs. We had a higher quota. We were consistently under quota. There was a move to expand into what Mr. Bender mentioned, the ability for a restricted license based on conch landings. Also, there used to be 100 horseshoe crab bycatch. That was increased to 500. So probably in retrospect, we then have to fit everything back into place to make sure the quota can be monitored. We did have an overage in 2009, very significant. We had another overage in 2010. So this now is a quota that's a little over 171,000 horseshoe crabs. It is a difficult challenge, and staff has worked diligently for 3 years through the industry to have something more manageable. So I thought it was important to let you know about that. And you've actually participated in that as recently as December. So those are my overall comments. I would like to point out, though, that I did meet with both Pete Bender and Ed Bender after I came back in December from the Mid-Atlantic Council, and one of the questions to me was on these pound net issues. And my advice was, if you'd like, you can go to the public comment period and bring that up, and the commission will ask staff to look into it and see what's involved there. Of course, the choice was a formal hearing, and that's fine, but that certainly was discussed. It wasn't so much about reporting. The reporting issue, I think, Mark Bender just talked about, the idea that he has been doing all the reporting. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Joe Grist to answer some of the specific items.
Ms. Grist.
I have been informed.
Thank you, sir.
Good evening. Almost good night, but we're getting close. I'll hit a couple of key points Mr. Peepender brought up. First, I'll I'll focus on the last part, which was on the dredge license issue. I'll start from there. As Mr. O'Reilly's mentioned, you know, we have led into a lot of industry meetings from staff about trying to get this fishery into a more manageable situation. We had a situation leading up until December 10th of a fishery that had developed various quotas, but also had various licenses that didn't match up with the quotas. In the documentation from the December 10th meeting, we also provided to you again, you'll note on page 26 that we include the same tables we've used with the commission for a couple years now, showing our quota categories and all the various licenses that could partake in those quota categories. And with each one of those license categories was a different type of trip limit, which makes managing those quota categories, tracking them, and projecting when they're going to hit 100% mark quite a challenge for staff. And as we've already had a couple overages, 9 and 10, and we know horseshoe crabs is a big issue, not just in Virginia, but coastwide and nationally, you know, it's our job to make sure we don't risk this fishery, because it is a very important fishery to the Commonwealth. So leading into the November 4th industry meeting, staff was leading into that meeting with, as we have mentioned in front of this commission before, one license, one category. Simplest way we could manage. It would be a single license for this category, or single quota. Everyone would have the same trip limit for that quota category. Simplistic management. Leading into the November 4th meeting, though, Mr. Bender did contact staff, and he had concerns about the unrestricted and the restricted licenses. The unrestricted, the old unrestricted horseshoe crab endorsement license could be allowed a trip limit of up to 2,500 crabs. The restricted, only 1,000. And for those who had the unrestricted, there was concern that if it got divided out in the dredge fishery, and at the time we were leaning more to a more restrictive trip limit just for the dredge quota, single license, that would seem to be a little unfair for those who had the unrestricted, because you didn't have to have the restricted license to go dredging. You could have used the unrestricted license to go dredging and do 2,500 crabs a day. You weren't required to have a restricted to do that. Okay? So when we went into the industry meeting, Mr. Bender was there, and we were appreciative of that. We always like to have good turnout at these meetings. That's the whole reason we hold them. When we went through the single options, as we suggested, Mr. Bender brought up this idea again. And we brought up basically an optional suggestion behind that based on the suggestions he had made, that what we would do, we would split this out to a Class A, Class B, just in the dredge fishery. Now, under staff's intent and what we've led along all the time, if we had intended this to be two separate dredge fisheries, we would come to you with two separate dredge quotas. It was never the thing. What we did build here was no different than what we have in the gillnet fishery, which is no different than we have in the guide license. You have categories for a Class A and you have categories for a Class B. You're in the same fishery. That's all we did here. So what we did was, fine, if you're one of those who happen to have the unrestricted endorsement license, regardless if you had the bycatch license, regardless if you had the restricted, if you had that magical unrestricted license, move you up to Class A. That way you can still have your 2,500 crabs while you're dredging. They could do it in the past. Why not let them keep doing it? Seemed like a good compromise. Everyone else who participated in the dredge fishery, whether they had the bycatch or they had the restricted, they can go to 1,000. Yes, there were a few bycatch individuals who came up in their trip limit a little bit. And actually, it was actually up to just four of those. Yes, they had a 500 and went to 1,000. So, yes, they came up. They didn't go up to 2,500, just went to that. Mr. Bender just contended that he was singled out, that he is the only one who, in this whole process, had the unrestricted and the restricted, and that this whole division and the one line in there about you can't have both impacted him directly and no one else. That's not true. He didn't ask the question correctly. When you go through everything, you got to also look at the bycatch licensees. There was also an individual who had an unrestricted and a biceps, someone who could be in the dredge fishery, who technically, if we didn't have that one line in there, would also have both Class A and Class B. So now we have two. But what good does it do? Class A is going to dominate the Class B. If you're out there dredging for crabs in the dredge quota, are you? You don't separate your licenses and your reports. Your reports don't indicate what license you're under. You're out there legally and you're reporting. So if you have a Class A, you're under the Class A. You don't need the Class B, because the Class A allows you up to 2,500 crabs. So as we led into this, under the single license, single quota idea, and then we made this one little adjustment based on a very good idea, actually, we thought from industry, it still was the same concept, except would just be two classifications. So that's what led into this. Now, I'm not going to belabor that one any further unless y'all need to ask questions.
Mr. Plumlee has a question, I believe.
Yep. Was that sentence in the notice regulation?
That specific sentence?
Yes. Or no. Something similar to it?
I guess, Bob, do you have the public notice? Can you read it? Read the public notice?
See if it was in your packet or not.
I didn't see it.
It was not in your packet. You know, again, I can tell you that specific sentence was not.
But in general, but public notices are kind of a broad thing.
Right.
So I just kind of would like to know what the public notice was.
We can get a copy of that very quickly, I'm sure. Get that up there. But going into that regulation and putting that together, you know, we properly did do advertising. 209, 22209 requires the proper advertising. We did do that 2 weeks prior. Did get through. We'll get you a copy of that to answer the question, how it was written. And that's fair. But how are these licenses allocated under the new management? Again, from the evaluation. We did everything based on the harvest reporting, and we expanded it quite a bit, actually. A lot of times you see us do limited entry. You see us just do mandatory harvest reporting, Virginia only. But in this one, we actually expanded it to include SAFIS, okay, the Atlantic Fisheries Information System. That's federal reporting, something we normally haven't done in the past, but we've started to expand out so that we can be as inclusive as we can. We also, if you look at the number of years we included in that database, we included back into the 90s, trying to get anyone who had at least one horseshoe crab to give them the opportunity to be in this fishery. You also remember we had a control date in 2010. Any activity after the control date was not to be considered. It was prior to the control date. And we've brought that up to the commission before. While we're waiting on the notice, I'll go to the pound net issue. I understand what Mr. Bender says. Mr. Bender knows very well. I work with him quite often on pound net issues. In fact, we've been up here together for other issues at this podium on pound net. And so I'm very familiar with the pound net issue. And when we're going through it, like I mentioned reporting, when we're going through the pound net reporting, we're looking very specifically if peat was listed on a report for pound net harvest. Yes, his brother Mark had a lot of pound net reports. And I will go ahead and state right now, because it's on the next item, but I'll state it right now, that Mr. Edward H. Bender, who one of his issues on PoundNet about not getting it, as of this morning, I can verify he has at least one horseshoe crab to a PoundNet in those reports, and I will definitely be recommending that he get that PoundNet license for horseshoe crab when his case comes up on that one. I'll put that out there. But we have been going through these records, all the scanned copies, trying to look for anything. Have not found it attributed to Pete's name. We have to go by how the regulation is written, which is you have to have been reported. You have to have been reported. That's what we have to go by. I appreciate he works with the family. I know a lot of our watermen do. But we have to go by how that language was, and it is reported. We don't have him on a report with horseshoe crabs in a pound net during the time period specified in that regulation. That's the only reason he's been denied I pound that license for horseshoe crabs. No other reason whatsoever.
Is there a notice available? It's on there.
Ah, okay. Sorry, I thought I saw him.
Can I have one question?
Please, Mr. Pumley.
Do you have a recommendation with regards to his request for a pound net license?
Staff does not have a recommendation. I'll leave it to the purview of the commission. I do acknowledge he works with his brothers, but I have to go by how the regulation was adopted. That binds staff. And if I go outside those
probably
boundaries,
binds us.
Right. I mean that,
and I'll
just add this in real quick. I'm sorry, Mr. Neal, but if I advise you any other way, I can guarantee you a couple other families are going to be showing up here under the same provision, who also work together as families on their pound nets. Now that's not a warning or a threat or anything. That's just fact to let you know that.
Dr. Neal,
I guess yeah. That's that, my question is, what is the purpose of this formal hearing? What are we doing? And my assumption is we're here to determine if proper procedure was followed. So I guess what are we hearing? You know, this is my first formal hearing, and so my assumption is if the public notice was publicized correctly, and staff has followed the regulations that we adopted, then there's nothing for us to do other than to say the proper procedure has been followed, unless there's a procedure that hasn't been followed correctly. Am I reading this right? I mean, I know I have your education.
Exactly right. I concur.
Somebody want to know what the lawyer thinks?
Yes, that's the class club.
What's your lawyer think?
I thought most folks of you are, you know, yeah, highly educated individuals.
You can advise. I get to speculate with a law degree. That's all.
No, Dr. Neal, you're exactly right. I mean, really what we have to look to, and we have to be deferential. Well, first of all, as Mr. Gross has pointed out, he is, and the commission is, bound by the regulations that y'all have adopted. You are charged in this hearing with, that's part of it, with the proper procedures followed. But with respect to the formal hearing, it's the commission's purview to hear everything and make a decision. Yes. The question you asked is a good one. I think that the commission, as a matter of policy, could also look at the equitable side of it. But if the commission's will is the regulations are the regulations, and we have a unique situation here perhaps in the commission's mind, are you hogtied to that? I would be hard-pressed to say you don't have the legal authority to consider that. It's kind of like going back to that one area we talked about when the fellow bought. You
right,
kind of inherited.
Right. Inherited, right.
Mr. Chris, do you have anything to add?
Just add, you all have the notice before you. We believe number items number 2 and number 3 cover under public notice what was passed on December 10th, 2013.
And, Mr. Commissioner, may I just to...
Mr. Gruppenen.
Just to make sure that the members of the commission understand that regulations of general application can't be promulgated until the express terms or a summary of the terms, including a statement on the purpose and substance of the proposed regulations, have been published by and at the expense of the agency at least once in the papers. And it goes on to say, if somebody sees this summary, they have the opportunity to come and look at the regs. And it's not that, and the reason that, the policy reason, in my understanding, the General Assembly did it this way is so that we don't have to publish every single reg. That gets expensive.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the commission up until Jack Travelstead was a commissioner used to publish the entire reg. And he came to me and said, how can we save some money? And so looked carefully at that, and we went to a summary at that time. And I can't remember. Based on this, it must have been before this notice went out. But anyway, I just want to let y'all know that a summary is appropriate under the rules, under the laws of the Commonwealth.
As I understand, the the applicant or the person making the request, Mr. Bender, is saying, I didn't know you were going to be passing this reg. If I had, I would have come and objected. And I'm being treated unfairly because I'm the only person really qualifying for this particular difference. And, Joe, you're saying two folks fall under it. But that's, in essence, what you're saying, Mr. Bender. And I think, I mean,
not that we have a record of the not that I know of that we have a recorded record of November 4th meeting, but I can assure the commission and the staff who were there that it was our intent and announced the intent that meeting that we would be going to public hearing, because at the October meeting we had requested a public hearing for the December 10th meeting. We are in that gap, and we had announced to the commission at the October meeting that we would have this industry meeting to sort out the final details for this for a public hearing at December 10th. So, I mean, we couldn't have even had the December 10th if I hadn't already been in front of the commission in October for the request.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Griss? Mr. Bender, do you have something to add to this that might be helpful?
Yes. He's also allowed to cross-examine staff.
Yes. Oh, incidentally, I thought I'd mention it, but if you have questions, you can cross-examine Mr. Griss.
Okay. No, I'm fine right now. I don't think I have any questions at the moment.
Well, just Mr. Just so you know, that's your only opportunity. It's not right now.
Okay. Well,
I just wanted to make sure you understood that, sir.
Okay. No, I believe I'll manage. Well, as far as the other boat, when I stated there was only one, I have a questionnaire data request info, what the subject is, from me to the chief of fisheries, Mr. O'Reilly, and regarding with this question number four, how many fishermen held both a restricted and unrestricted horseshoe crab license? One individual was eligible. Didn't you have it?
Yep.
One. That's where I got the one boat. Now, last year, last May, I had two vessels working. One had a restricted license on it. One had an unrestricted license on it. I have the landings here. It's proven. Same day. One in Chincoteague, one landing in Cape Charles. I felt like I had every right to do that. I held two licenses. There's nothing stopping me. There's no provisions in the previous regs saying that I couldn't hold two licenses. I held two licenses and two boats working. Now, I'm not an attorney. I get nervous. I don't speak well, but I want to cite this code section, Virginia Code 282-203. In pertinent part state, number 7 here says, conservation and management measures shall, where practical, minimize regulatory burden, which inhibit innovation, expansion, and normal business operation. Now, when I was given this second license, because I landed 10,000 pounds of whelk, plus I own a whelk boat, I own three boats, okay? I have two trawlers, and the third one is a shrimp boat slash trawler, conch boat. I use it for pine netting. But she has a conch boat, conch pot davit on it right now. You know? And that second license was formed for conch fishermen. Had nothing to do with horseshoe crab landings. You had to land 10,000 pounds of conchs. Had every right to hold that license. This gives me, says that I have a right to, or that the commission should not inhibit innovation, expansion, normal business. I bought an extra boat because I had to put two boats harvesting horseshoe crabs. And that second boat for 2 years left. And here's the landing proof that I used for both boats. Now, I can understand what counsel is saying, that maybe I should have gone and looked at the regs, but I attended meetings every meeting, every industry meeting that I could make, I pretty much attended all of them. I may have missed one that had something to do with hand harvesting and shrink pig. I called, hey, what's this about? So hand harvest shrink pig. It didn't affect me. I didn't go. And after attending these meetings and talking to staff, and staff knowing that I held two licenses, and yes, I was excited at the industry meeting when it said up there, well, a Class A and a Class B. Well, I held a restricted and an unrestricted. No one told me, well, hey, Pete, but you're only going to be able to have one of these after we do this rig. I don't feel like that. I think somewhere, somehow, I was not informed, and there's nothing in any industry meetings by talking to anybody in staff, several conversations. Over the summer, we got questionnaires. I've talked and talked and talked. No one ever gave me any. I would have been here. That's a good question that you asked me about. Why didn't I show up this meeting? Well, really, the only issues that we had were reporting issues. And right or wrong, you know, you guys can decide whether I should get a pound net license. That's fine. But I could have come to the last meeting. You wouldn't have changed the pound net rig to fit me into a category. But I didn't know that this was going to happen. Advertising is personal. I just think that I would have been. I think that's one of the main things. And, of course, like I said, I just don't think it's legal. The commission to put that sentence in there and take my license. And that's what's happened. I've spent a lot of money. I have expended in this thing. And now you're going to inhibit
it. Chief O'Reilly, can you help us out here, please?
282203 is cited so often, but what's forgotten is 282204.1. So the commission has the ability to limit entry. And the signs not only have been there, but I know staff has indicated that limited entry had to be done to manage this fishery. 2 years ago, it was pointed out, staff put up a chart and showed the overcapacity in this fishery. At that time, there were 20 trawl permits, a lot of dredge permits, permits everywhere. And we made a commitment through the commission process to better refine our limited entry. And I don't think it's discriminatory in that fashion, because I certainly remember the days when we used to have 900,000 pounds of striped bass being harvested from the ocean, and the commission had to develop a limited entry system for striped bass. The commission had to develop a limited entry system for summer flounder, black sea bass, horseshoe crabs. It's part of what happens. But going into the commission meeting, what's advertised is not always specific to every line, but it certainly is specific to the idea that there's going to be limitations. And I think that that has been conveyed to the industry starting a couple of years ago. And that particular night, I know you were there, and I asked, don't you want to reduce the amount of trawl permits? And your response was, they're not trawling anyway. Now it's been reduced a little bit. The other categories have been reduced. As Mr. Griss said, you have a license that's attached to a particular gear to a permit. I understand the heartburn that's being expressed, but at the same time, I think this has been following a long route to get to the point where we are. And Mr. Griss may have some other comments.
Can I add something before I lose track?
Yes, at some point.
If it would, as you are. There are only, as far as I know, there are three participants in the race, three participants last grid season.
What do you mean that? If we're going to do these right, these fellows need to come in and say their piece. Staff comes up and says their piece, and they can respond to what staff says, but they're opening up, and we've kind of lost control of this.
We have kind of lost control.
Four. We need to bring this
okay.
in.
Okay, three out of the four are here today. Just four in the dredge fishery. That's me, father, and my brother. I thought it was only three. What I'm trying to point out here is that every year, I asked a question, but it was too general. I said, in the past 5 years, how many participants? And it was something like 15 or so, okay? But in the past few years, there's only been 3 or 4 boats in this fishery, and I do think it's a good idea to cut people, you know, to cut these people out of the fishery that have never used their license, and that's what's been done. The only people that have been cut out, individuals that have been, that can't, that are no longer eligible for a license, never landed a horseshoe crab, not one horseshoe crab in 18 years. Everyone else are still eligible to fish. One crab in 18 years is all you have to do. Now, I am an active participant, and I'm not suiting my horn, but I'm one of the larger producers. And I've grown in this business. I've been given licenses by the commission, 2 licenses. Let's see how it's fair to take that away. Especially, let me point out again, and I'm sorry to repeat myself. Listen, there are people in there that only land horseshoe crabs as a podcast. Never went horseshoe crabbing in their life. They went blue crabbing, and hey, you know, let's keep these horseshoe crabs. So, 500 horseshoe crabs, all they could catch. They couldn't direct, they could not do a horseshoe crabbing. Now, 6 individuals have been given a Class B license. Doubles their capacity. Now they can catch a 1,000. They're no longer limited to the season. So how are we saying, well, we reduced this? This is a reduction effort, and we should cut these guys back, when actually 6 people have been given a Class B license that were not eligible until 2014. But they're going to take my license? I'm sorry.
Mr. Bender, do you have anything else to add at this point? We've tried and retried, re-retried this ground. Okay.
Which issues are we considering?
Both. Well, we've got the horseshoe crab pound net and the Class B horseshoe permit. And declare the matter before the commission.
Again, I might be simplistic, but my issue is to staff follow proper procedures, proper and all this stuff, and I haven't seen any indication they had not. In fact, I think they have. And so, if the purpose of the public hearing is to determine whether staff did their job correctly and the commission did their job correctly, then I just haven't seen anything other than he just doesn't like it, which they did. But I don't see anything illegal or improper about how they conducted the business.
That's a fun one.
Well, sometimes these things have unintended consequences, and I'm not sure if this was an unintended consequence or not. If it was an intended limitation, is what it appears to be. Whether everybody knew it was going to impact just one person or 2 people, the idea was to limit the resource so that the resource is protected. And it's difficult for us to come in and hear individual stories and say, oh, that moved me. I want to let this go, or I want this person to slide in when others cannot. I mean, that's why if you start looking at those equities giving them too much importance, you override the effort that was done in advertising going forward and all the meetings that were done with the industry. So that's why I would tend to want to deny the request, which I think is that on both fronts that are being made today by Mr. Bender. And I don't feel good that he's cut out in any way or limited, but we passed this ordinance for this regulation, and it was applied to him. And when we hear these things, you can't always just be moved by the fact that if it had turned a different way, he would not have been affected. So I for that reason, I would move to deny the request.
There's a motion to deny the request. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
And second by Dr. Neal. Any discussion?
I mean, I think it's with this public notice, I mean, pretty clear that a number of issues were going to be addressed, and I think number 2 and 3 clearly outline, the direction that the public hearing was going in. I do think this is unfortunate, possibly, but I don't know that there's a means for us to fix it here at this time. I think the regulation is set. So I would agree with the motion in the second.
Any other discussion? Well, there's a motion and a second properly made to deny the request for the horseshoe crab permit and the Class B horseshoe crab permit. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes unanimously. Which brings us to Mr. Edward Bender. Mr. Bender, I need to swear you in. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you will give today during in the course of this matter be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you very much. Please state your name for the record. Thank you, sir. Please proceed.
I have difficulty talking in motion. If I speak harshly, sometimes overlook that I can't really control the volume. I couldn't hear exactly what was going on, but I thought I heard a question of why Peter wasn't at the public hearing when this horseshoe crab amendment was made December 10th.
Yeah, that's been discussed.
Yeah. Well, I got a little something to say about it. The problem with Peter not being here and me not being here because it wasn't properly published. It was unlawfully published. The law requires this commission, if they're going to promulgate regulations, to post it in paper, but also the regulation itself must be in this office 15 days prior to the meeting. Now this paragraph, which takes away his license, his second license, wasn't given to this commission until the 10th of December, the day of the meeting. No way we would know that you all were going to do that. In my mind, the regulation that you make, or this commission made December the 10th, is no void, unconstitutional, and all. That's my opinion. Now, I gave you like 9 pages, and I'm going to try to skim along through it. But one thing that bothers me is staff doesn't look at equity. You people are good people. I mean, you're selected by to come in and do a nasty job. Really. You rely on your attorney for legal advice and his staff for fishing advice. Yes. You do the best you can do. But to kind of treat the commission, I'll be 84. April. And I've been before they used to me. We went over way around Street in that little building before 1970. I've been there many commissions. And what I found out about the commission is that staff treats them somewhat like mushrooms. Keep it dark, feed you with information that looks they wish they have. Now, when we get back to equity, and I'm talking about peace and my equity, in the year 2000, if not organized state, but commission, the Land States Commission, set quotas statewide. Virginia was asking for over 700,000 crabs for the year 2000. Now, if you look at the back of the page I gave, which I think is
good. You know something? This number has a point, actually.
Exhibit 2. If you look at Exhibit 2, you'll see that Virginia was given 152,495 crabs. And they're asking for 700,000. And you like to not got that many crabs. If they wouldn't for Peter's effort, you wouldn't, Virginia wouldn't have got the 459,000 crabs. There they go. The Atlantic State Commission in figuring how many crabs each state would get went back and looked at years landed in Virginia in 1995 to 1997. During the years, Pete was working a big steel boat, catching horseshoe crabs, landing them in the state of Virginia, and turn them in to fishes. So they use Peter's catch in the tournament, giving Virginia its 400-some thousand grand. Now, I think he deserves more credit for
it. Illegally noticed.
I think he deserves more credit.
Then let's just take care of this one. Now,
when it comes to catching credit. Yeah.
What do you think?
All right. Mr. Bender,
I've got a motion
to
make.
1 second, please.
If you can have a seat, sir, or stay right there. I think,
share my observation.
Yeah, council has noticed that the date of notice was, what are we saying, the 26th of November, and for the December 10th hearing.
Which is 14 days. So, Mr. Bender, you're right. It didn't comply with 209's 15-day requirement.
You're right.
Okay. So what we're going to do, this is not a properly noticed regulation, and therefore it's what? It's not in effect?
Well, no, the regulation's in effect. Other people have had an opportunity to appeal that. We're not talking about opening up the floodgates for the entire regulation being appealed. What we have before us is a single individual petitioning for a license based on, as Mr. Dr. Neal would observe, the potential for improper procedure.
Okay.
I'm not saying that ipso facto or as a matter of fact Mr. Bender wins a reversal here, but if the commission wants to reopen it on motion, reopen the hearing on motion and consider that factor. And
I'll move to reopen.
But I think the staff ought to have an opportunity. Well, what I'm looking at here is I know staff's up there shaking his head no. The draft regulation has to be published 15 days in advance of the hearing. It says by November 26th, 30 days in November. The 26th doesn't count. That's four. You got 10 days to the hearing on December 10th. That's 14. 209 requires 15. We're days short.
Chief O'Reilly, please.
May I ask a question about the 26th? What you're referring to?
On the second line of the notice, first full sentence. Staff ought to have an opportunity to respond. I'm just saying I'm looking at it, right. And facially it looks like there may be a problem.
What I would say there is,
before you talk to Chief Riley, I would recommend the commission act on the motion to reopen first.
You have an answer for that.
I figured
we can reopen and hear it. I mean, that's
the point.
I'd move that we reopen the previous formal hearing for Peter Bender on the two issues that he brought before.
I should have had your dad go first.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on that? All in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously.
Who's second?
Mr. Erskine.
May I just expedite things?
Yeah. Mr. Kugelman, that would be one.
Is it Arthur Bender? I don't mean in disrespect. I just kind of pay attention to issues rather than names. But do you have any other evidence that you would like the commission to consider now that the hearing's been reopened other than it may have been short a day? I mean, we've heard everything else you've had to say. Your father raised an issue about it being short. It appears on the face of the document he may be correct. We're going to give staff an opportunity to address that, as I understand the commission's pleasure. But is there anything else? Because I don't want to get in. We've kind of given.
Nothing else.
I just wanted to make that clear on the record. Thank you, sir.
We do have a question for Mr. O'Reilly.
Mr. O'Reilly.
Just to point out that, yes, that is a situation where that should have been the 25th to make it perfectly 15 days. What we would need to check is we were putting the regulations on the Internet as well. And I would suspect that probably it may have been there. We're trying to look that up. The other situation is there may be a situation the 26th instead of the 25th, but we always have the regulations available. It says in the offices, and of course we have them drafted. If anyone calls or comes by to check, that's fine. We used to put the draft regulation on the Internet. Now what we do is we put the notice on the Internet and we make it so that it is something that can be looked at by the public. They're drafts, but if they're amended, then probably something has changed. But it really may not be substantive.
It should be by November 25th.
Anyway, if we're lucky enough to find that publication on the web, that may
publication.
Right.
Publication and filing, I'm sorry.
We do prepare these and have these ready, but I recognize that on that notice we're a day short.
Mr. Krugelman.
I will just voice my due process concern here. I am not telling the commission how to vote. I am not trying to usurp any kind of policy-making decision or the will of the commission here. But at the same time, I feel it's my duty as a member of the Office of the Attorney General to point out issues where due process violations may have occurred. And while I will confess, staff has always done a superior job in seeking advice, in following advice, in performing its duties. But counsel's concern here is the fact that we have a publication, regardless of whether it was timely available, the notice to the public is one day deficient. And I take the due process concern very seriously because this is the government running. This is the people's rights being affected. And the General Assembly has told this commission that the publication and filing shall not be less than 15 days prior to the hearing. And while I can understand how that could be read narrowly and saying, well, the publication and filing might be different than the date in the actual notice, at the same time, the public's notified that it's not available till 14 days before. So that's counsel's due process concern. And if there's any questions about that or if somebody thinks I've gone far afield, I'm certainly happy to.
No, but I guess my question is that affects this individual who made the hearing or requested this hearing who has said, I did not receive proper notice. That is what he's presented for both issues that he's put forward. It doesn't render void the regulation.
Correct.
The regulation still exists.
Nobody's challenged the regulation. He's just challenging his denial on the basis of improper notice.
And so, assuming that this is a defective notice, and I'm not saying it is one way or the other at this point, but assuming it would be defective or deemed defective for this individual who's made the request, then it would be appropriate for us to consider his request under those circumstances of having lacked notice or sufficient notice.
May I have a moment to formulate a response? I just want to make sure I say this with sufficient particularity. What I am saying is not that the regulation that was passed is ineffective, nor that this somehow opens up an opportunity for everybody to come in and say, well, what about me? We have one individual who has raised this particular issue with respect to this particular license. I'm not saying the commission must find for him. Commission could find other ways that his process was met. If the commission comes up and tells us, you know, I can, without getting into what I wanted to do was bring the issue to the attention of the commission so it can deal with it. I think it's appropriate for the commission to deal with the concern. At the same time, I can also see the commission affirming its decision and that being defensible. However, based on Dr. Neal's concerns and the seconds to the motions and the discussions that we've had, it's appropriate for the commission to be aware of a, for lack of a better way to describe it, a technical flaw in the notice. I suspect that once we get the publication date, it's probably going to be fine. But at the same time, council has concerns about the date published in the notice. And that may, in and of itself, you know, cause the commission to reconsider its decision. It may cause the commission to say, well, we've heard everything and we're still comfortable with the resolution we reached earlier.
Well, I'm not comfortable.
I guess my question would be is that if we overturn staff's decision based on the date, then you say it doesn't open a floodgate, but how could it not? Meaning that we still have a regulation that was passed if we decide it was passed with an improper notice. It's still a regulation that was not properly noticed.
There's a time limit to challenge a regulation. That time has well passed. This was passed in 2010, I think.
No,
I'm sorry.
2013.
I'm with
December 10th.
December 10th, okay, a couple of months ago. And we're past the time where people could come and challenge it. What's more, and I'm not suggesting this, but if somebody did come and challenge it and they came up with a, you know, dead ringer legal argument that I'm unaware of at the moment. It would be very simple but a little bit costly for the commission to re-advertise it and adopt it as it is and do it, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's, and get her done. So this doesn't invalidate
that. That was my question. Should that be done?
I think that, no, I don't think that needs to be done until somebody challenges it, and then we can address that based on what issues they raise.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Well, with the information that vendors have provided, that this is a fairly small group of fishermen that we're talking about and the impact that it has upon their business, I am concerned that the I's are dotted and T's are crossed with regards to their notice of the time prior to the hearing, and it would affect my decision with regards to permitting the changes that he's requested, or the pound net license and the ability to use both the restricted and restricted. And so for that reason, I don't know if anyone else wants to chime in on their thoughts here, but it does bother me. You know, it's probably my training as a lawyer for all these years, the due process is drummed into my head, and that makes me very sensitive to it. But I think we have to consider that as a body, that we're fair in that
that initial process was fair. He's brought that out as that was part of his presentation, that he wasn't properly noticed. Now, he might not have been able to put his finger on exactly what it was, but now that we've uncovered it, I think we might have a duty to consider it. Whether it persuades everyone is a different question, but I'm certainly persuaded by it.
Ms. Erskine.
Yeah, I seem to agree that there are some issues here that maybe we need to address, and I don't know. I understand Mr. Kugelman's assessment that we don't necessarily need to open up, a public hearing, but I may be more inclined to do that, just to be reassured that there aren't other people out there.
I agree with him, because either we say the regulation is a regulation, period, and then that really doesn't change anything we do with these individuals. Or if we say the regulations are regulations, but we'll go make an exception for these two individuals, I can't come up with making an exception for these two if the regulations are the regulations. If they're the regulations, they're there. And if the regulations weren't properly done, then maybe they should be.
Chief O'Reilly, can you help us out here, please?
Yes, there's no way to fix that particular date on the notice. The newspapers will show that you did due process for the newspapers, but 282209 does require the filing and the newspapers 15 days in advance. I would much rather have another public hearing for two reasons. One, perhaps there's someone else who is disadvantaged by not getting the notice, and number two, the information that we presented you today doesn't really change just because of that one day. And so I would recommend that you go ahead and have another public hearing and advertise it.
So does that mean he's properly holding his license until we have that public hearing and consider it at that public hearing?
Well, I don't think so, because you have a regulation that's standing right now that says he's limited to the Class A dredge license, and that he does not have a permanent license on Mr. Kiefbender. What you heard Joe Griss say earlier is that we did find information that Edward Bender did have horseshoe crab reported from PoundNet, so he would be allowed that. Concerning the Class A dredge vessel, the recommendation would be no, but we didn't get that far. All things considered, I think that the public hearing is in order.
Uncharted ground.
Well, there'll be monsters out there.
I think.
Ms. Plumlee.
I would make a motion to hold a public hearing. How many days do we need out to hold a public hearing on this? April? At the April meeting date?
We don't need to request a public hearing. We can just set a public hearing date, right?
March 25th.
Right.
And what we're setting for public hearing is this particular reg, which I need to have recited.
That would be 4 VAC 20-900-10.
I move that we hold a public hearing on the next March hearing date on 4 VAC 20-900-10. And that we take care of that motion first. That's agreeable to
before
everyone.
Before dealing with Arthur's
right.
case, okay.
Motion for a public hearing at the March Commission meeting on the horseshoe crab regulation. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
A second.
A second by Dr. Neal. Any discussion amongst board? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Public hearing will be held next month. Which brings us back to Mr. Kiefbender's still open hearing.
Right. And Mr. Kiefbender still doesn't qualify for the exemption for the exception that was established to receive a pound net because of the failure to report over the last 18 years catching a horseshoe crab. Is that accurate? And so you can give notice all the livelong day, but if we do not change that date, it's not going to matter. But with regards to the restricted and unrestricted, he, as being one of the only people affected by that and not receiving the public notice to come and present on that issue, I would tend to want to move forward with giving him both licenses.
That's great.
But there's going to be pushback.
I'll point out to the commission, though, if you read the regulations, agenting is allowed in that district. To agent, you must give the agent not only the permit in question, which at this time would be a Class A, but your CFRL. So unless he holds two CFRLs, which he does not, nor does anyone else, he would not be able to use both a Class A and a Class B at the same time, thus making the whole point of having both moot.
May I answer?
Well, hold on, if you don't mind. I have to understand this, too, at some point.
Individual harvester.
So he's restricted by a separate regulation, then?
Yeah, by a commercial fishing registration license, agent provision, and regulation 610. In order to do agent.
How long had that reg been in place?
This is 1993. That's 93.
So that has nothing to do with what was noticed on November 26th of
2013. Right. The only fishery in Horseshoe Crab that cannot have an agent permit is Antarctica. If you allow it, all the other towns.
So to grant it would be futile, is what you're saying.
It would be futile.
Okay.
I looked in the Horseshoe Crab regs several times to find where I couldn't use both of my licenses, and had a boat, two boats working last year, got landings. I mean, I don't see that. I don't see where, because I I'm sorry?
Mr. Griff?
This is under the current regulations. These are individual licenses, Class A, Class B.
Current.
Let me answer that.
Current.
Buggies can't use two licenses. I've got an example, Deborah. I'll run it by you. He's got two boats, got two licenses, unrestricted and restricted. That's before 2014 now. So he's only got one registered fishing license. And I want to tell you that's coming back because I'm hearing things that are bad about everybody's got everywhere you go. You got to have your license with you. But getting to, you can't use two horseshoe crab from the same time. Let's say Peter sends the cabinet in the east. Federal waters to catch male crabs. The quota hadn't been caught federal waters, so he's lawfully in federal waters with his boat catching male horseshoe crabs. And when it comes time to land them, he goes in the Chincoteague. Now, his boat has got a seafood land license issued by this commission, which allowed him to unload those crabs. But he can't unload them without a dredge permit. He don't need his commercial license. He needs his permit on that boat. So he can use two licenses. You can use two horseshoe permit dredging licenses at legally at the same time.
Mr.
Griff. Under current regulation, that would not be allowed. Under current regulations, a lawfully passed regulation that
is
still in effect,
so it's still futile to do.
Right. Because if you did what you wanted to do, you would have him fishing outside the current regulations.
So under current regulations, it's that doesn't apply. Under the regulation that was passed.
Under current regulations, you mean regulations before the one that we're considering today?
Under the regulation that was passed on the December 10, 2013 by this commission.
That's not allowed. Well, but not yet.
All the whole licensing system is based on the individual. It's not based on the company. It's a part of the district. That was the whole design of this. It's the whole design we talked about the Board of Commission as we've led up.
But my question was, were prior other regs restricting the use of these two licenses or not? Or is it just this reg that we're looking at today, the one that we're discussing the last 25 minutes about notice?
These two licenses don't even were replaced completely. They will go back, I mean...
Let me ask this.
Are you considering the regulation back
up?
Yeah,
we'll have
to pull the regulation back up.
And that's going to handle it?
Well,
what I'm saying is that if we can
use
our equitable powers to allow him to have both, if we actually can't use both under other regs other than this one.
Okay. All right.
It would seem to me that part of Pete Bender's argument has been that you did not understand the ramifications of the details of what the commission was passing in December and the 10th, and that if you had known of the details and had concluded there would have been an impact upon you, you would have been before the commission to argue your case. If we're going to rehear this whole thing at the March meeting, it seemed to me that's a pretty good time for you to make your case at that point. Unless I'm missing something.
Well,
I held these licenses for several years and have worked both of my boats, and now I can't. I feel like, in a way I'm being injured. I mean, I've had a license taken from me, and there's two ways of looking at it. I understand that I can come back next month, take another day off, you know, and I did not know that my license was going to be taken. I had no idea whatsoever. I mean, I'm here today.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a formal hearing on your case, Mr. Peter Bender, here. It was reopened. We've rediscussed everything. We've identified this problem. We still have to come to the conclusion or the reconclusion of Mr. Pete Bender's hearing.
Well, I guess under current regulations, he can't have the two licenses. And so unless we want to get rid of the regulations, which we would decide at the next meeting.
Hold on. We're talking now, please. I've had enough of listening all day to everyone repeat themselves 12 times so we can sit here and make decisions at midnight. I'm sorry.
Dr. O'Neill.
My feeling is we've already decided to have a public hearing next month, and that's when this should be just talked about. I mean, we have a regulation in place which won't allow them to do what they want to do. And so we will decide next month whether that's the regulation that we are going to have or not.
Can we continue the hearing over to next month?
What I would recommend doing is denying the relief without prejudice. And that would allow Arthur Bender to come back and plead the case. And what I mean by without prejudice is it's not a final decision. You can come back. It's just dealing with the hearing we have today. It's not saying don't come back and you're done. It's just now that we're going to have to hear it again, come back and talk about it then. But there's no promise it'll go one way or the other.
That sounds appropriate under these circumstances. And we'll go ahead and do that for both requests?
Yes, sir.
For both individuals and make it all at one time? March is going to be probably as long as today's hearing, the way that it's put together. Is anybody open for April? I don't know if it's any better in April. But I'd hate for everybody to be here until 7 o'clock at night in March. But I think... based on everything, then I would move to deny without prejudice the request made by the Benders today
Both Benders.
Both
Edward Benders and Keith Bender. Please, Mr. Bender, I mean, we've gotten to this point. It's been an hour and a half here. We're
let me finish my motion if I can, because I'd like to keep a train of thought, okay? To continue the Bender's request until the March proceeding so that we can take up together the new hearing on the regulation and their request. If that's, I mean, I think that may be, without prejudice to them, we will hear information, we'll take up evidence, in fact, from the Benders at that time, and it will continue this formal hearing, but it is a denial without prejudice.
Denial without prejudice, rescheduling a formal hearing for the next commission meeting. So I understand, and I just want to make sure I understand.
That's it. Second.
That's a motion and a second. Denial without prejudice, and will we hear this on the next commission meeting? Matters before the commission, any discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Chair votes aye. The motion passes unanimously.
That was a good, it's a good catch.
It's a very good catch. Mr. Bender, you should have been a lawyer.
I should have.
Yeah, you should have.
I'll turn it in. Didn't do it.
Thank you very much.
Make sure you come back in March.